Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Before we get into the ideas we're going to share today, I want to briefly mention our national conference. We have PJ Fleck as one of our keynote speakers. We have state champions there, guys who have won over 300 games. We have four of those guys now, including the winningest coach right now, active coach, and second in football history, JT Curtis, with over 500 wins and 26 state championships. Go to usafootball.com/NC19podcast to register and see more. We continue our journey through the season, and joining me for deliberate practice is my guest host, Andy Ryland. Andy, it's been a great season so far, talking through some ideas here with you.
Coach, thanks for having me on again. Hope the listeners have enjoyed this series. I know I really have. The last two have had some great feedback, so excited to continue down that path with this episode.
Yeah, our theme today is going to be sharpen the sword, and we're going to get into some ideas that help coaches really continue that growth that they've had all season to this point, not stagnate as they maybe start to decrease the workload of the players or maybe cut back in time and practice. So we'll focus on some ideas that allow coaches to continue to get that growth and understanding and progress their players further down the line within their systems. But before we do that, let's look back at the last couple of weeks. We had a lot of listens on those. One of them was actually one of the best listens all time for a podcast, and that was Juice. And in Juice, we focused on ideas and strategies to really put some of the learning and some of the ideas that we work on and practice back on the players.
Yeah, you know, we talk about Juice, and I think when most coaches say it, the stereotype is, you know, that guy during warm-up, during dynamics, running around, getting the guys going. But you could look at that as a bit of external motivation. And we were talking about, we want to build that internal motivation. And whether your team is out of it and down, so you need something to, for those guys to really hang on to, or whether you're going for a championship here in the next couple of weeks and you're trying to keep those guys focused on getting better, having the players start to have some input on, hey, we're deep in the season, you guys have played some opponents, what is giving you trouble? So often we repeat the process of, we play a game, the coaches review the film, and the coaches tell the players what they need to do to get better the next week. Well, 7-8 weeks into the season, I think it's a great time to ask the players, hey, what are you struggling with? Whether it's a speed rush or a bull rush for one of our offensive linemen. Are you struggling with a particular route combination as a defensive back that you find tricky? You know, ask them some of their opinions, and then you can focus the practice to address their weaknesses. I think that really increases intrinsic motivation, which in turn gets their personal energy up to get better. And now your practice is flying around because the guys see themselves having an opportunity to fix those holes.
And from there, Andy, then we talked about the idea of momentum. And the following week, the focus really was on how do we start to scale back maybe on some contact and utilize going back maybe to shields, to bags, maybe some things we used early on in the process, but also not just using those, finding a way to give them more of a game-like feel or a realistic feel in the drills we're using them in. So that episode focused on, and we brought in things like jump stretch bands, pool noodles, and physio balls. We were putting shoulder pads on our shields, and then using the jump stretch band on some of those bags, really, again, to bring more into those drills. And I think there were a lot of great tips we had there that made those drills feel more game-like and realistic.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you were the one who had come up with the title, and I loved it. But we want to keep the momentum of players getting better and player development going throughout the season. And I think sometimes coaches, and especially maybe younger coaches, can start to lose that when they start looking at decreasing workload, especially decreasing contact. How do you still get those skills sharp, and how do you still get players developing those skills. And sometimes it takes some creative things to be able to present challenges to your players while using those soft contact surfaces. And the physio ball one is a great example of low collision, low contact because of the rubber and the stretch involved in there. But you can still have some pretty high forces and focus on those techniques. And I'm a huge proponent of the banded tackle drill. I think we posted it over the summer, just trying to tease a little bit, and coaches picked up on it. And in fact, I had a coach reach out to me this week and say, hey, where do I get one of those bags with the bands on it? I had to tell him, hey, it's just a trick we use. We attach a jump stretch band and you can pull that sucker. And the guys that have done it, we've got great feedback from floating around on social media. So any of the coaches out there that have used the jump stretch bands, have used pool noodles, have used physio balls, thrown the shoulder pads on the bags, which is an idea as a defensive guy I'd never heard of for offensive linemen, and absolutely love to hear the feedback on it and see how you guys are using it, because I'm sure there's some other great examples with the creativity of our coaching community.
Absolutely. Feel free to reach out to us on social media or email. Andy is at USA Football MT. I'm at Coach K Grabowski. Let us know what you're doing out there. We would love to include some of those ideas in this podcast. And again, those episodes were Deliberate Practice Juice and Deliberate Practice Momentum, which brings us to today, Deliberate Practice Sharpen the Sword. And today's idea is kind of built around the framework that we are at the time of year where we start to scale back on time. And that presents some challenges, certainly, but I think what coaches are saying is we've reached the point where we just need to continue to time things up. And it to me, sometimes maybe has too much of a maintenance feel for it. I know in talking to coaches, Matt Drinkall at Kansas Wesleyan University, number 9 in NAIA right now, and one of the top offenses in the country in college football at nearly 600 yards per game, talked about that on this podcast, where as the season went on, they went from 2 hours down to an hour and 15 to late season being at about 50 minutes of practice. Well, what can we do within those periods, within some of our drills that, again, we've been using all year long, that we can bring that mental edge to it, that it's not just we're out there for the purpose of running through things and keeping them sharp, that we're finding a way to advance the ball, so to speak, and make sure that our players continue growing.
Yeah, and I love the examples you're going to give. I think I would call it maybe layering drills, but adding some layers, some mental decision-making, some reads to it, but kind of getting more out of the same periods we've been doing with a couple tweaks so that we can maximize the limited time that we do have. And when I say limited time we do have, you know, it's probably the right thing at this point in the season based on your practice schedule or where you're at to keep the guys fresh, but we still need to be fast and sharp. So how do we maximize some of our old standby drills to maybe increase the total learning in practice while decreasing the time?
Well, the idea I want to focus on for offense really involves finding a certain indicator in that defense to help us understand what they're going to do for us. And I know a lot of teams out there maybe don't make those checks, but I think this is something, even if you don't make checks, is really good for your players to understand. It's always easier when you know what is coming at you rather than trying to adjust and understand those things on the fly as you're running down the field or as you're getting into your blocks. But if you look at any defense, there's usually one guy who gives away what they're going to do. And if you can understand where those guys are through film breakdown, it can really help, really not just your quarterback, but the whole offensive unit. So something I've done throughout my career is to find that one guy. And a lot of times it is for a too high defense. It's that boundary safety who does it. But again, you have to handle that week by week and kind of look at the game as a whole. I would always go through and start to look at those things, and usually it would take about midway through the game to start to understand what their coverages are, how those work with the guys up front, and then you start to see, okay, well, who is that one guy who's giving it away for me? So the particular example I'm going to talk about is this from this past week, and I work with a quarterback, and we do film work, and I really don't get involved in anything with their game plan. I ask him up front, what kind of things are you guys doing this week, so I can understand things that he has to look at. But we go through and try to better understand what the defense is trying to do to him. We look at some personnel things. But primarily, it's finding that indicator and letting him know, hey, this is the guy who really is going to give you that tell. He's going to let you know what the coverage is here so you can make better decisions. And so this past week, it was a safety. And from a too high shell, if you just look at the surface of it, you say, okay, they're in too high. They're disguising things pretty good. But you start to look at, where is that guy on the hash? Where is that guy maybe vertically where he's cheating down a little bit? And we found one guy who told us 100% of the time what the defense was. And so by the end of the film session, I went through with the quarterback, and we would just go basically a second or two in, and he was rattling off what the coverage was going to be. And that was very helpful for him on game day, and they put up, I think, 49 points this past week and really did well. But as I thought about it, that indicator can help not just the quarterback, but everybody on defense. Because, for example, if that safety's coming down and indicating that they're going to bring five and have some type of three under three deep or two under four deep type of zone blitz, then that helps the guys up front as well. So finding that guy can be useful. Now, how do you work that into practice, especially if that's not something you guys have done all year long? And the easiest thing to do is to have that player on scout team, wear either the same number jersey as that player, or if you don't have it, maybe put them in a different color jersey, especially early in the week. I think you want them to stand out. So let's say you're always wearing on scout team yellow jerseys. Maybe you put him in a red to have him stand out a little bit. And then as the week goes on, maybe it's the same color, but he's wearing a certain number. And then you just remove it because it's not necessarily that one guy. It's the guy who plays the position. So I think over the course of the week, you scaffold that and scale it back. Now, how does this fit into drills? Well, let's go to some timing things, right? We're going to continue maybe to run our routes on air and get our timing with those routes and different things. And we talked early in the year about how we can add some elements to that that help give it the realistic game-like feel, makes the windows the same, makes the timing the same, and we certainly want to continue to do those things. But now let's add that indicator in. So maybe it is early in the week, and we have that indicator out there in red, and we just move him around. So in this particular example I was talking about, if he was on the hash or within basically 2 yards of the hash, they were playing quarters 100% of the time. If he went to about the numbers or just outside the numbers, then actually not even that far. He'd kind of split the distance between hash and numbers. Still look like a too high if you're just giving it a glance, but now he was indicating that they were going to be essentially in, you know, what I call a three cloud, where that corner is playing the flat and he's playing over top in a cover three. Then we look at the situation where he would come inside the hash by about 2 yards and cheat down just a yard or two. If you use some kind of cadence tool with that, it would show that he was coming down to replace a linebacker and that they were running some type of a fire zone there. So now you have that blitz indicator. It helps your protection. It even helps, you know, a lot of teams will run blitz with that. It helps those guys pick up some of the movement that's coming. So again, I think one of the biggest things that gives any offensive line trouble is movement. What if they knew movement was coming? What if they could anticipate that and be able to get their eyes adjusted as things start to move and they pick things up? I think that's a huge thing for them. And again, it doesn't need to be something that you're even checking your plays, but them just having that understanding that happens is going to be useful. So let's extend that then to an inside run period. Maybe an inside run, you're just working against the box and safeties typically don't come down, but bring that indicator down. He's going to be helpful and run some of those things where maybe he comes down and replaces and they're running the fire zone, but things where he's just staying outside on the different hashes. And for your guys inside, if they get their eyes on him and see, okay, he's not down, that's the only indicator they need. So again, it's working that into things, especially as you progress through the season, because while through the course of the season, if you're doing really well, there's going to be those teams on your schedule you could beat. But any little tip as you get into the playoffs, as you're playing your rivalry game, as you're playing for a conference championship, things are certainly going to be a little bit tighter, and little tips like that can help you win a game.
It's absolutely great. And I think the point is we're layering some decision-making and some read aspects within our route timing. even if it's just having one collision defender that, you know, we have to work our stem around, and then the one indicator safety, well, think about all the reps we just picked up from a QB wide receiver perspective on diagnosing coverages. Well, maybe those reps, that learning allows us to be really developmental while we have limited time, so that when we go to 7-on, we go to team, we don't feel stressed by not having seen every look or being able to get as many plays. If we bring that indicator safety into inside run, same thing. Now I may not need a dedicated blitz period because I'm going to show some of those run blitzes and run stunts in inside run, which now I feel like, hey, we got a good look at it. I don't panic about having limited team. So that layering effect, that consistent learning, really helps at this time of year.
And I'll throw an example, just a short video up, a link on the show notes, so be sure to check that out. And I'll just show how I go through and diagnose some of those things and give the example that I was talking about. So let's move things to the defensive side of the ball. And again, the idea is, we're building upon those things. We want to advance understanding, especially as we get here late into the season. Our players have probably become more proficient with our offense. Their understanding is better. So how do we take that step on defense?
Yeah, I think a couple things. First off, I'm going to start with inside run and use a very similar idea here. First off, there's always going to be keys, and coaches are trying to crack the code, whether it's a two tight end set and they always want to run towards, you know, number 88 because he's their blocker guy or those sorts of things. We're always doing that. So I think we're pretty good at identifying those things and using coverages. But where we can really layer some things in is, I think, the overhang players and outside the box. A lot of inside run I see, maybe you do some tight end trade, so you're working the front. If there's a sniffer, an H-back, we're working him in motions. But what about those slot receivers, the ones that can change the strength of the formation? That's not something we do a lot in inside run. So similar to your indicator, what I look at is, you know, we can put a cone out for our two wide receivers on either side, and we say we have a single back and then an H-back sniffer type. Well, then what do we do with the other slot? Typically, he's not there. I like to keep that guy in the inside run period, that slot, because he's going to manipulate my overhang, which a lot of times is going to manipulate where my backers line up if they're going to cheat that way towards their coverage. Well, allowing that slot in there allows me to start doing, you know, not just your orbit motions and kind of your trick plays on inside run, you know, maybe your orbit inside zone basic, but you can start motioning him across or doing an in and out motion. So now your backers get the work of communicating, changing alignments, but still having the same gaps. Or maybe we have a complete change of strength. If I can start getting some of that learning in inside run, let's think about how now I'm getting more of the reps I need, and I don't have to wait for full team. Simply taking one scout team player, placing him in a slot, giving him some motions, giving him some formation changes, allows us to start working on all the different things. It also really allows our overhang players to work on changing different angles. They can start working on their alignment changes, defeating that block. The slot is designed to block the most dangerous man, and it's really a great tool. The other thing is, while people have often called inside run like 9-on-7 because we have our defensive box players, I think with the rise in quarters coverage, it's really important to bring the safeties in, include them into inside run. Now, if it's competitive or start talking about numbers and who has the advantages, remember, we're not in the point of the season where we're worried about that. We're worried about preparing our players as best we can. So if we envision that situation now where we have a tight end H-back sniffer type and a slot receiver that we can motion in and out, bring our safeties into the inside run, allow them to start communicating. The part that I like most is we start seeing the interaction between the overhang and the safety on that slot receiver? Is he trying to block most dangerous? Is he what's his release look like? Is he trying to seam and stem and hold the safety? How are those two communicating? How are those two interacting? Because our safeties are going to read that overhang. That overhang is going to be dictated by the slot, and we want to make sure we fit it. Typically, we fit it stationary and inside run, because inside run is about inside run. We're going to knuckle up and be strong in there. Having that slot motion back and forth, having both safeties have to communicate, having the backers have to slide, any fits that are adjusted need to be perfectly executed within the pass off of who's now doing what. It just adds another layer of 9-on-7. And when I think about that inside run 9-on-7 period, you know, I think it's not about, hey, saying we have to prepare for this thing as far as it's only runs. Think about it in totality. We're preparing for what the offense is doing. So let's start giving them realistic looks. And if you're cutting back on team period, and we've all been in those meetings where we're scripting and linebacker coach is saying, hey, I need to see this play because I know this is going to be really challenging for this guy. And the defensive backs coach wants some pass plays and the defensive line coach wants the draw. Well, now we're looking for time and we're arguing for reps. It's okay to say, you know what, that's fine. Hey, take that play, coach. You get that bubble screen for the defensive backs. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to plug it into inside run. Give me a slot receiver and an H-back during that period so I can work that adjust in motion, and I can check to make sure my Sam linebacker has all of his rules and adjustments right for when they run that tricky little motion or whatever we've seen on film. So while it's fun, while it's cool, while it makes it more realistic, let's not forget the goal of sharpening the sword is how do I do more with less time? And that's by layering the learning across multiple periods, not just waiting for team.
Andy, I want to dovetail with that with something that Art Kaufman, former FBS coordinator, talked about on our episode this past Monday on the game plan, where we were specifically talking about working the RPO and how he would do that in practice. And I heard you talking about that overhang player. And really, when we look at inside run, certainly he has some gap responsibility and we need him there. But if we aren't stressing him with somebody else like that slot out there, we get into the situation where he's cheating the drill. As hard as you want him to make his reads and do what he's supposed to do, he doesn't get that realistic feel because he knows it is 100% run. So what Coach Kaufman would do is if that player had some kind of responsibility on the RPO, on every single play, he would make sure that somebody was throwing the RPO while somebody was also handing that off. So for him, he was able to basically stretch and kind of give that responsibility. You hear about option teams who they'll use everybody with a ball or nobody with a ball to make sure everybody is going where they're supposed to. So I think an element like that where you do have somebody maybe throwing that bubble out there or at least that guy running the bubble in, and sometimes you're throwing it, now it gives that realistic feel to the overhang where he gets much more out of that drill without really affecting anybody else there.
And you can do the same thing on the backside. I know a backside backer away from the overhang is a popular target for that quick slant on the RPO. And so that's why having that guy there and even including those safeties becomes so important. I think anyone who's kind of followed me on Twitter knows how much I'm a huge fan of eye manipulation. It's what offense tries to do to defense. So as a defensive coach, we should try to incorporate that in practice. So having those slots, having those guys, initial keys, initial reads, or secondary responsibilities being there as a challenge is only going to make their learning more realistic. And I know we've talked about it before. Sometimes in an effort for specificity, we strip so much away from it that we go, hey, guys, it's inside run period. We strip everything away, and now we know that it's just going to be a combination of zone and power. But that's not what makes it difficult on game day. What makes it difficult on game day is adjusting the formations, motions, and the potential for that RPO or for that, you know, quick seam release, and us having a job to do. So let's layer it. Let's put him there. He can be in a special jersey. He can be just a guy you have. Throw out an extra offensive lineman. They'll love it. But just make sure that the spacing is right and that guy's out there so those responsibilities are being managed. And then we're fitting into the run play, maybe a second slow, because we've had to clear that objective.
I think of a funny story back in my first year coaching college ball. I was a quarterback's coach, and we were running some of our, essentially an inside run. We were running kind of stuff that would be 3-by-1 with the bubble, so zone read with the bubble. And I remember this was early in camp, good on good, and it became a battle of wills between our offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator because he was showing things that 100% would be a pull and throw bubble. So we put the slot out there, and we went through that whole inside run period where we were throwing and pulling and throwing the bubble. And I know those guys kind of got heated, but they each made their point that they need to get that work that's relevant to them in that period. So we adjusted the period, and we were sure not to go into an inside run and throw bubble 10 times. But I think early on it was that battle of wills to make sure everybody was getting a true look and that we weren't going to let either side kind of cheat the drill. So I think that's the point, and I love the idea of eye manipulation. When your player who is potentially a dual responsibility or is supposed to have a responsibility while other guys are, let's say, covering the run, he's got to cover that RPO. That eye discipline is so important because when you train him and he's not having maybe those stressors on it, and he's down, he's a linebacker, so he's involved in the inside run period, those reps lose their functionality for him. So I love the idea. I love how you included those things, and it's certainly important to think about that in all phases. And we're talking about indicators here. Moving this on to the special team side, doesn't end there. We can include some of these things in our drills. Again, starting to take back some of the contact, starting to take back some of the load on the legs and the running and all those things. We can incorporate that into special teams as well.
No, 100%. And I think one of the themes of today has been kind of, you know, I've said layering, but it's also about the levels, you know, whether it's reading from slot into the run play for the overhang, or in your case, it's reading the safety into the collision defender on routes on air. So when we had been talking in preparation for this one, I had brought up about the importance of reading the second level or the back wall on kickoff coverage, and you had a great story about that.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, my son's team playing in a big game, and team they were playing is running a middle return. And I can't tell you if that's something new they did for that week or was something maybe that has already shown on film. But what happened was everybody came down, and instead of getting to their blocker and locking him out and reacting off of pressure, everybody just took their outside gap. And it was like the Red Sea parting. And 95 yards later, the returner's in the end zone. It actually happened twice in that game. So I think it's something, again, not having to run down and have those big collisions, being able to take some of that out, but understanding what the other team is trying to do with their kicks. And this is a time of year where you might see a couple teams running multiple kick returns at you. So maybe they have a side return, maybe they have a middle return, and understanding those indicators is important.
Yeah, and talking about limiting our total workload as we get later in the season, during our special teams individual period, we ran kickoff coverage. We'd always do it in two parts. The first part would be avoiding the front wall, and the second part would be fitting the wedge or the back wall. And what that allowed us to do was break it up. So it might be a 20-yard sprint and avoid the front wall, 20-yard sprint, avoid the front wall. Then we blow the whistle, we move to the second phase. Now we could start ourselves already down the field and work on fitting the wedge, and then we'd get a couple team runs. Well, one of the things that I think is really important if you're going to use that system is when you're doing your front wall beat with speed avoidance aspect, make sure you throw some back wall players back behind the drill and give them a direction that fits the returns you're going to face, so that as the players hit the line, they close that space and they're approaching the front wall defenders, their avoidance is going to be in the right direction. It's no use not having a VDA cycle in there and just saying, okay, run, give them a juke and beat them to the outside, because the return might be going middle, the return might be going to the opposite side, and in that case, I'm going to want to cross face and beat it to the inside so that I can make my way to fit either the middle return or chase down far side return. So simply doing that basic drill, we have we go three at a time. We go, there are three outside guys, our four middle guys, our three outside guys. fantastic, there we go. We're going to put the front wall blockers in front of them, but 20 yards downfield, we're going to put those two guys who are going to give us a look. Is it double team coming at me? Is it big wedge setup? Or is it double team going the other way? So now my guys are reading the second level while avoiding the first level and making sure they're avoiding in the right direction. Again, this can be a 20-yard drill just about the front wall. It's going to limit our total distance. It's hopefully going to keep our guys fresh, keep the legs strong and healthy and ready to go for game day. But we start to get looks at what we're going to see. Now when we run those team reps, our guys are used to reading the second level while beating the first level. Therefore, they're in position to actually fit up that second wall and make a play. And it seems so simple. It's one of those moments where you go, gosh, why haven't I been doing this for years? I know the first time I saw it, I thought, you know, I'm a fraud. But it can really add a great layer to this drill that teaches those guys to not just beat the front wall, but beat it the correct way. Just like all defensive football, there's a right way and a wrong way to miss a tackle if you're going to, based on our leverage. So let's beat the front wall the correct way instead of just doing mindless reps where we're always going to avoid to the outside.
Well, Andy, some ideas for offense, defense, and special teams today. Remember to check out our show notes. That's at blogs.usafootball.com. Last week in Momentum, we included quite a few drills in there, video of drills. The week before, I think we included some charts. This week, I'll include that video. So check out our show notes as well. Andy, as always, great time here talking through some ideas with you. And it's not a lot to add these things. We didn't talk about anything that really fundamentally changes our practice structure, but it's just adding those little details that's going to help sharpen the sword.
100%. A detail added in an earlier period in practice helps save you time in those later periods. It helps keep your guys fresh. And it's working on the true decision-making and the technical skills they're going to need. And that's what it's about this time of the year. It's about sharpening the sword, not just from a technical or from a tactical standpoint, but also those players' techniques.
Again, check out Andy. Follow him on Twitter, at USAFootballMT. I'm on Twitter as well, at Coach K. Grabowski. We have some good interactions on there. I'm going to throw a poll out there on our last one on Momentum. And again, we'd like to hear some of the different things you're doing and add those into our show here as we progress through the rest of this season. Good luck to everybody this week. Andy, I look forward to talking to you next week.
Yes, sir. Talk to you then, Coach.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.